Hey everyone, welcome to Awkward Ascent. I'm your host, Christy Pritchard. Join us in our conversations around consciousness, connection, spiritual growing pains, and psychedelic therapy. If you have noticed, for the last few months, I have been a little MIA. I've had a lot to go through and transmute some negative energies around me that transferred to my internal world. So it has been a few months of cleansing those out and pushing through them. I'm really happy to be back though. I'm really excited to continue on with the podcast and trying to find a way to get the time to do it has been a struggle as well. But I love this channel. I love my guests that come on. I love what this is all about. So I am going to continue and be as consistent as possible. No promises with weekly episodes anymore. That burnt me out a little bit, but I will at least try doing bi-weekly or at least once a month. So I really hope you continue to join us and know that it is quality over quantity and really believe in this message and what we're all here to discuss. So with that said, I'm really excited today. I just got off a wonderful call with a colleague, a dear friend, and a business partner, Anna Shalina. She's from South Africa. She is a relationship coach, a mindset coach, an author, and an entrepreneur. She is a gem full of wisdom. She's also a plant medicine enthusiast, and we're going to be discussing a lot of her experiences with iboga, ayahuasca, psilocybin. She has so much value, and you want to learn more about these medicines and what they can add to your life, this is definitely the right episode, and very excited to have Anna with us today. And without further ado, welcome to the episode. Hi, Anna. Thank you so much for being here. Excited to see you.
Hi, Christy. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And as I mentioned in my intro, I have not been here for a while. So welcome back, everyone. It's been a few months I've had off, and I'm so grateful to have Anna with me because she's somebody that I know quite well. We actually are creating a little thing together, which we'll get into a little bit later. So it's just nice to have a familiar face on the other end while I get readjusted to recording and being here. So thank you. I really appreciate you and all that you do and bring to my life. So should we tell everyone how we met? Because it was pretty random, actually.
Very random, very serendipitous as well. And I love these types of stories. When I hear them from other people, I was getting inspired about like coincidences or serendipity and things like that. So yeah, go ahead. Tell people.
So I was scrolling around on Facebook and I see this course that Kat Hollowell, somebody that you used to work with, was. I think it was a social media course. I don't even remember what the course was because we didn't talk about it too much. When I heard a little bit about it, I'm like, sounds interesting. But you and I chatted on that call for an hour about plant medicine and about everything under the sun. And yeah, it was just so funny. I just felt a very kindred connection to you. And then we didn't talk for a year. And I remember reaching out, asking how your book was going. And then I was asking if you and Kat wanted an intern because I really felt like we vibed. And you were like, maybe we could work together on this other thing. And boom. And the Relating Academy fell into my lap and you had been working hard on it already. And so, yeah, that's how we met. I love it.
Yeah, it's been such a great collaboration. And all the prettiness of the website and the design and everything is all courtesy of Christy. And I'm just so grateful that we had that meeting per chance, and we really connected on so many different levels. You were just going to your first Aya experience at the time, and I had done like over a dozen, and I was like, yeah. And I love hearing, I love it when people get introduced to new things, you know, and their world starts to open up. So it was really great to connect with you on that level. And then yeah, we just had complementary things to help each other with, you know. And the Relating Academy needed your skill set, and we started building it. So yeah, no, it's been great.
Yeah, it's been super great. I'm really excited. And we are launching soon. We don't have an exact launch date or anything, but we can get into that a little bit more and what the Relating Academy is all about later on in the episode. So stick with us. For now, speaking of plant medicine, I think we were going to talk about your recent iboga. And again, we're on the I know you've done it a few times, and I'm now setting up to go do it myself for the first time. So I don't have much to offer in ways of talking about the plant medicine itself, but I really want you to share your story and stories, if you don't mind, and just a little bit more about the medicine. Because as I understand it, it's not as well known. So do you want to give us a little bit of a history on it?
Yeah, I am so in love with this medicine and this modality of healing and introspection and all sorts of things. And it's only been available to the Western world for about 30 years from what I know. It comes from Central Africa, like Cameroon, Gabon. And it was really, you know, kept to the people of those lands for a very, very long time. So compared to the other medicines, it's relatively less well known. And, you know, I feel like ayahuasca brought me to Iboga because I met my Iboga shamans at an Aya ceremony. And before I'd met them, I was never interested in it. I always thought that it was going to be like, I always had this perception that it was going to be incredibly difficult. I always thought that it was going to be like my last resort if I was ever in a very bad mental state and I was like desperate to, you know, like get to a better place or whatever. I really thought that, like the price you pay, because I feel like with these medicines, there's a price that you pay, you know, and I thought the price was very, very steep and I was wrong.
Emotionally a price you pay? Yes. Yeah.
Oh, emotionally, physically.
That it was kind of a last resort because from what I understand, you don't sleep like you can on Aya after Aya. Aya is like a shorter stint and then you can have a dream state after and have a restful time. And from what I understand from my research on Iboga, it's like not the case. You can be up for 2 days. Is that kind of what you mean by?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. So the ceremony is actually like over 2 days. So you take the medicine for 9 hours on the hour from about midnight on the Friday night until the morning on the Saturday. And then, yes, you do stay up for the rest of the day and there's no sleeping. Doesn't matter how much you try. You're like laying in bed. You're kind of spending a weekend in bed, but there's no sleeping. And so, yeah, that can be hard, difficult. But, you know, when you put yourself in that mindset of like, you know, I'm here for the weekend. I'm going to like surrender and like relax into it. You know, I'm not going to fight it. And then there can be some nausea that comes with the, because you're going through a death experience. There's some purging. It's not as prevalent as with ayahuasca, for example. And I feel with ayahuasca, it's like 50-50 if you're going to purge. And well, for some people, it's more. For other people, it's less. Like my mom, for example, has never purged from ayahuasca. I purge about 50% of the time. Other people, you know, so it's all different. I feel with Iboga, there's less. You don't always purge at all, but they can be still because it's a death practice. It's a conscious practice of dying. So the more you die, the harder that kind of like the hangover, the recovery of that is, right? And that can go on for a couple of days. So yeah, there is a emotional, mental, physical price that you pay with all of these medicines. And so, yeah, I was the impression that it was like the price was too high, it was going to be too difficult. And I was so wrong because I've done like hero doses of mushrooms, I've done tons of Aya, and I've done now 3 Iboga ceremonies in a year. That's how much I love it.
Yeah. Wow.
I really love the Iboga medicine compared to the others the most.
What sets it apart the most for you? And what has been the outcome of your experiences that set that apart as well?
Yeah, really great question. So I find that, first of all, it's going to be different for everybody. So, you know, just because the medicine works so well with me, the way I'm put together doesn't mean it's going to be the same for someone else. But I love like encouraging people to try lots of different things and also like try it more than once, because one time, you know, it doesn't necessarily can be not the best experience or the best experience for most people. Actually, I've spoken to the shaman. They say that their first Iboga experience is their best. And so what sets it apart is I feel it's like one of them is like the way they dose it. So meaning like, you know, I'm dosing it over 9 hours instead of like taking a cup of something and it's like, good luck, right? You get blasted to the stars and the moon. You have no idea, you know, how far you're going to go and there's nothing you can really do once you're in it, right?
It depends on who makes the crew and there's just so many variables involved. Yeah,
exactly. There's a lot of like letting go of control, which there is a lot of letting go of control in Iboga as well. So I understand that part of the whole purpose of these things is to, you know, surrender control a lot of the time, you know. But I also find that with Iboga, it's much more like conversational. Like you can start off slow And then you can like, you know, go a bit deeper if you want to, and then pull back because you have 9 hours to play with the spirit of this medicine. So the spirit of the medicine is called Bwiti, B-W-I-T-I. And it's like, it's a really beautiful, it's androgynous. So it has like both genders. It's, yeah, it's just a very beautiful spirit. And so you have time and it's very conversational. And you can like ask things like, show me the humor in this. Like, you know, if there's like things that you're being shown that you don't love, you can like really, you know, ask what you want. You can ask to, you know, step into like, give me what it feels like to be a bird or a bee or any kind of like animal consciousness on the planet.
Sorry to interrupt, but you get like the physical feelings of being, and you can really put yourself there.
Yeah, yeah, you do. It like you really step into it. It is phenomenal.
Well, I've heard that before. Very interesting. Have you asked specifically to be any specific animal? And if so, what was your experience with that?
I asked to be a bee the first
time. Awesome. So what was your experience with being a bee? How did that feel?
It was very short and it is very much like a dream state. So which means like when you're in it, you can really feel it and you feel like you're never going to forget it. And you feel like it's such a big experience. And then you wake up from it the next day and you're just like, what was that again? So it was just like, I just could feel that there were lots of like fractions in terms of like fraction vision, almost like a bee's like eyes, you know, how they work almost. So it was like that kind of, there was more of a sense. And yeah, it was incredible. I definitely next time would play around more with that.
Does your shaman ask you questions that you ask them to ask you throughout your ceremony?
So like I said, it's very conversational. So like you said with Aya, it takes you wherever it wants to kind of thing, you know. And I do find that I've always gotten my intention met with Aya, even though it was in a roundabout, very unexpected way every single time. There's no ways. Here, there are a lot of surprises with Iboga as well, but also because the ceremony is so long, it's like 9 hours plus, right? Like it doesn't end once you stop taking the medicine. You're still in it for like the whole of the next day. And even the day after you start, you get downloads and realizations as well. So it like stays with you for a while.
Can you still feel it? Or are you just getting like the downloads, or do you physically feel it everywhere?
You physically feel it for like the next day.
Okay.
And then the following day, once you have a solid night's sleep, what I also love is like dance is a very part of the ceremony, a very big part. So that in order to bring yourself back to life, you take a little bit more wood. So they call Iboga wood in ceremony as well, because it is like little wood chips that comes from a tree. And so you take a little bit more and then you dance. And the third time that I did it, I was feeling so nauseous. I was like, even if you feel like nauseated and you're throwing up, you still have to dance, because if you don't dance, you don't sleep. So they make you dance, and they make you dance for a long time.
That would be kind of challenging, I'd imagine. But I do it after hero doses. We dance and stuff. We kind of shake it out. We dance. And then we were getting into the conversational part.
Yes. So you can ask questions, and the shamans, when they're good and they know how to direct you, they'll help you ask like the right types of questions. And one of the most powerful, it's not a question, it's more of a statement. It's saying either so what or whatever, but in a way that removes judgment. So say you see something that comes across. For me, I feel like it's like a screen, like I'm in a movie theater and there's like a screen in front of me. Other people don't have that. I tend to be quite visual with all medicine. And say there's something on the screen that I don't understand or I don't like. And if I say so what, in terms of like removing the judgment of it, like, oh, there's this thing. And then if I say, so what? And then it's like, okay, well, I don't like it. So what that you don't like it? You know, and you go down, so what?
Oh, it goes down a road.
Yeah. And then like you start to change the channel, because the only thing that ever keeps us stuck in a loop is our judgment of it. So when we start to like let go of that. So that's a really, really powerful tool that I've used in every ceremony. And yeah, so you have those types of tools, because like you're almost like you can't be going to war with your mind. You can't, because you're like shaking out your whole mind and going like, okay, what's in here? Why is it making you feel a certain way or making me make certain decisions? And have certain behaviors, you know? So having these tools is really powerful.
I bet. Amazing. And it's good to know those tools as well before going in. I have been researching nonstop since you and I had the conversation. It's funny, I messaged a girlfriend of mine. I knew immediately that she was going to say she'd already been thinking about it. And her exact response was, I'd already been thinking about it. So that's super great. And her and I have also been trying to plan a San Pedro ceremony as well. So
San Pedro is my second favorite medicine in the world.
We'll have a whole other, I'll have you back on the show and we can talk about our experiences. But yeah, I'm really excited to try. And when was the last time you did San Pedro?
Last year. It was combined after 2 nights of ayahuasca. We did a San Pedro day.
Right.
And so it was very much like the feminine and the masculine energies.
And the masculine balancing. Mm. Yeah. That seems like a perfect way to write down for Maya.
Yeah. And San Pedro is just such a treat.
Yeah.
After ayahuasca, because it's so nice and compassionate.
I've heard that it can really take you down. Like, it's more of a warm hug, but it can still have some jarring effect.
It can definitely give you like a whipping, like a good lashing. If you're in certain. I've heard that as well, where it's quite harsh. But for the most part, it can also be very social, you know? Yeah. Like, so you're like laughing a lot, you know, just saying a lot about nature. You're really connecting there. And then like, I just found like, you know, in some Aya ceremonies, I'm like, why did I experience that? Why did I see that? Or why, you know, there was like some questions. And like San Pedro had a really beautiful way of tying things together and just answering those loose ends kind of thing.
Right. Interesting. A little bit more communicative in a direct way, I guess, would be. Well, I'm excited for all of it. I feel like the beginning part of my psychedelic journey was so recreational. And it's funny hanging out with a bunch of my friends that I haven't seen in years, where we started a lot of this experimentation in our teen years with mushrooms and acid. Us girls were trying to reflect on a time where we weren't high on one of those two substances, but now doing it intentionally as an adult, it's just such a different experience. And I'm just so grateful to be connected with so many other people who are intentionally utilizing these.
Yeah, I did not recreationally do anything when I was a kid.
No.
I was in my 30s
so
when I started.
For you? And I love asking this question, because for me, the first time doing like a hero dose of mushrooms, for example, wasn't super shocking because I had already probably done that amount of like playing in the forest before. So for me, laying there, just doing it in a different way had a very different feel. So how is it for you, your first time doing a hallucinogenic substance, having not participated in any of the recreational stuff?
Yeah, great question. Obviously, I had no idea what to expect. I just heard accounts of like fractals and ayahuasca was my first psychedelic that I'd ever taken. And I was in my 30s. I was 30 when I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't necessarily recommend it. Like try as well.
Start with psilocybin, I would guess. Yeah. Seems gentle.
Yeah. Try a little bit first. I don't know. I also find that there's lots of things in life that don't, even though I've never experienced them for the first time in this physical form, they don't surprise me necessarily all that much. I've had many of those different times. Sometimes it's been places that I've seen or visited for the first time in my life on earth, but it feels familiar. So I wasn't too shocked about it. I had a mantra going into it, and because I think for my first one, I was really scared of like seeing dark things or difficult things. And I didn't want to get stuck in a bad trip, for example. And so my motto was to like lean in. My first ayahuasca ceremony, I sat up the whole night. I was sitting up. Yeah. And I was like, you participate. That's like participate and lean in. You know, it's you asked to be here. You want to be here. So. There was one time I remember when I started to like, I was like tired, wanted to slouch and like lie down into my little sleeping bag. And I was like, no, sit up, lean in.
And I've kind of heard the opposite, that a lot of people, from their accounts anyways, that when they're sitting up, they're kind of like fighting it because there's like some resistance there and they're like moving and fighting. For me, leaning in is just like complete surrender, laying down. Like I didn't move at all. My friend, I wanted to check my pulse. I was going places in my internal world, but I guess it's all going to be individual. Your leaning in would have been participation in that regard. But lean in, though, that's a good mantra to go into with any plant medicine.
Yeah. And what actually happened was I did go to like a darker place where it went from like fluorescent blues and purples and really beautiful colors to like started to go black or dark, you know, and I was like, uh-oh, kind of thing. And I was like, okay, you're here for it, you know, like lean in. And then it turned into this vision of these like insect wings. They were like these beautiful, spiky, like insect wings. And the message that I interpreted from that was like, you know, your dark side is also beautiful, you know? And like, and then it's moved and transformed very quickly because I didn't like stay stuck in the fear of it, you know?
Just allow it to have that resting in your subconscious to accept and to lean in your case. Mine had to do a lot with acceptance. It wasn't a formal mantra, but I just knew going in that acceptance was the name of my personal story. So, and accepting whatever messages came along, just being the observer and trying to understand the downloads, but without trying to hang on to them.
I find that's one of the most difficult parts of any journey. And because like, I just find there's like, I get these aha moments and I'm like, I really need to remember this, you know? So I try to like,
yeah,
but you can't, right? And you kind of have to like, you have to trust that, you know, whatever is being opened up to you is yours. It's not going to be taken away, right? It's going to, it might come up again in 2 weeks or 2 months or 2 years. And then you're like, oh, you know, like opened up then.
Yeah.
And I'm not necessarily good at listening. Mostly, like,
good at the retention, like, what not good at that part?
No, like, for example, there have been many ceremonies where I completely resisted and they were incredibly difficult, you know? And so, like, I could be equipped with some of the best mantras and tools, but sometimes it doesn't go.
No. That's a part of the acceptance, too. It might not go as you want it to. Tough cookie. It's going to go as it needed to. And that's part of it too. This is just what you need right now. So just take it. Yeah.
Like, for example, I did my first 5 grams of mushrooms like 2 months ago. And it was the worst night of my life. Terrible. I don't ever want to experience anything like that again. Right. I barely made it out.
What happened in your case?
I had a lot of visuals because I always do. It was very bright. So I just find like, also, sometimes with Aya, I just have like a flash in my brain. So it feels like an explosion and there's this giant flash and then you just don't remember anything. And, you know, it is like an instant connection to something, but it's quite difficult to go through. And I just remember like really feeling like I was going to die very desperately. Like I was like trying to plan how to reach someone I know, like one of my parents, sort of thing. Like, where's my phone? Like, how would I even type on a phone that's melting in my hands? Like,
that's awful. What were your first kind of inclinations of coming out of that? What kind of allowed you to grab the rope and get out of that hole?
Time. Like, it was really like lots of like,
not suffer, but just move through it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I just had some help, I guess, with people who were like sitting and helping. And so they like talk, like, you know, I was like, I'm not, you know, I need a medical doctor. I'm not going to survive this. They're like, yeah, you are. You're going to be okay. So just like getting out of it, like I'd actually like all the tools that I have, like using my breath, mantras, anything like was lost to me, you know, which was a little bit concerning because I have so many different tools, like being a mindset coach for like years. And all this, like, yeah, sometimes even if you know a lot of things, it doesn't help you. And, you know, it was interesting, like, I came out of that, like, quite angry, like, for weeks, like, for at least, like, 2 weeks. I was quite frustrated. Like, there was a lot of, and I don't know if that just had to come to the surface, if I had just, like, frustration inside that was festering or doing things physically that had to come out, but it was an interesting experience where there was no afterglow. I was just like mad the whole thing.
Well, and it's funny that you bring up anger because I had a bit of an instant. It was an old buddy of mine, but, and like, I don't know, he said something that triggered me and he said, anger isn't a very healthy emotion. And I was like, anger is a natural human emotion and it's fine if it's expressed in a way that's not scathing and directed at someone. I was just angry in the general scope, but I felt so much better after. It was like a pressure release and like something had to come out of that moment. And it was just like a pressure release. What are your thoughts on anger?
Anger is just like any other emotion. It is as useful and as good as any other emotion when it's, you know, you listen to. I find that anger most of the time when you stay with it long enough turns into sadness. I wonder if you've had that experience.
Yeah, I have. definitely.
Yeah. So anger and sadness are
shame
too.
I find too.
What's that?
Shame. And shame, I can find that underneath there as well. Sometimes under anger, shame or sadness, I found.
Yeah. 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 So like the transmutation of how most emotions go, like go from anger to sadness and shame. And then when you sit with that, then you break through and then you start to like, the world starts to glisten a little bit and you start to like produce DMT in your brain. So you don't even need plant medicine when you do emotional alchemy, which is like moving from anger to sadness to acceptance and to like, you know, opening up to the beauty of things. So, it's one of the most powerful catalysts of emotions. So it can be a very useful emotion. If someone's stuck in apathy, like I've had months on end when I've been stuck in apathy, and like the thing to move from, can't go from apathy to passion.
Yep, that makes sense, to move that energy out, because apathy is just stagnant. And if you're stagnant, there's something just, you're suppressing something perhaps. And
how did I come out of my apathy?
No, I was going to say your anger from the psilocybin.
Good question. I think I just allowed it. So I didn't numb. So that was important, was to not use, alcohol or other substances to numb sit with it as uncomfortable as it feels. because then you just like suppress it even more, you know, and just stays in your body. So that was a big part. And yeah, and then I went into an iboga ceremony a couple months later.
Oh, and did you go into the iboga ceremony with some residual frustration, or had you cleared that energy before going?
I definitely wanted to understand. I wanted to have compassion and understanding for it. So I think I did get that. But I didn't, like, I wasn't feeling necessarily angry or frustrated at that stage. No.
Okay. Good to hear. Well, I'm now even more excited to dive into some iboga and wood, or what was it? Bichu? What was the name?
Bhuti.
Bhuti. Bhuti. I really wish that.
It's a weird word. And yeah, Bwiti, Bhuti. And in your iboga ceremonies, you can meet Bhuti, which you'll know. Because like she or he, whatever form they kind of like come, it's usually like an African face, and could be any gender, and they are usually brighter than the other images, which is like, it's so astounding. Like that there's a universal experience of this spirit that looks different to everybody, but they usually wear white or red, and they like stand out. And it's a very ancestral medicine as well. So because it's like a death practice, you get to like meet lots of ancestors from many different lands, which is always really interesting. Like I often see faces of people that I'd never met before. And actually the first time that happened was in a Dr. Joe Dispenza event. So it wasn't even like on plant medicine with Dr. Joe. I go pretty far as well.
Joe, he's the greatest. Amazing. And so you weren't even having any induced hallucinations, but maybe your own DMT. And what was the practice that you guys were doing for that?
Yeah, so it's called a pineal gland meditation, and it works with the manipulation of melatonin and serotonin in your brain. So the reason that you do it at 4 a.m. in the morning is because that's when there's a certain like switch that happens in those hormones and those chemicals in your body. And if you're awake for it, and you're lucid and conscious, then you can like experience like really vivid, like psychedelic experiences. One of the furthest trips I've ever had was just purely on this pineal gland meditation. So you use breath work. Breath work is a big part of it. And also hypnosis. They have like things like on the screen, which kind of like trick your mind. And yeah, so like you activate all the like energy centers, or what some people call them chakras. So it's about a 4-hour meditation, but it feels like it goes in an instant.
Wow. And did you do that in person with Joe Dispenza? Wow.
Yeah, I've done it twice. The first one I did with in Spain with Kat, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. I did it together. Oh. And then the second one I did beginning of 2020 in Dubai. And I did that with both my parents, actually, which is great.
Cool. Well, what an experience to do that with your parents. And so did you get your parents into that, or did they get you into that? You got them?
Yeah, I got them into it. I'm a little bit of the pioneer. At the beginning, my dad was the pioneer. And then he kind of like handed over the ropes to me.
The reins, so yeah.
I do most of these things first. I got my entire, well, one stage, my entire family was meditating, which was great. Yeah.
Good for you. I mean, I think everyone needs a pioneer in the family because a lot of people aren't wired for wanting to seek new adventures internally, externally. So good for you for being the one to step forward.
Scary.
No, I feel that for sure.
I don't blame people for not wanting to do it. I'm like, gosh, I wish I was like you, but I can't. Like, I have too much trauma to fix.
Yeah. Don't we all? We're just probably really upfront about our trauma. But yeah, I'm really grateful for all of the understanding that I even had trauma to want to seek out this medicine, to want to heal myself. It got to a point of a rock bottom. I guess it wasn't like a rock bottom in a classical like substance abuse sense. It was a rock bottom and nothing is working in my life sense. And I'm just so sick and tired of everything revolving in these same patterns and the merry-go-round. And to get out of that merry-go-round, we have to adventure off into different realms and to experiment and see what works for us, you know? So that's been my personal reasoning for all of this as well. So I'm glad we share that too. Did you get everything that you wanted to mention about iboga? Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on before we switch gears here a little bit?
Just topic of, you know, being very difficult to do these things. I got like in this iboga ceremony, which was like I mentioned, the third one of the year, I got this really amazing download that I'd love to share.
Yes.
Which was like the power of doing difficult things. And within us, within me in every moment, lies all different types of versions of myself, right? There's the older version, there's the current version, and there's a future version of myself. And, you know, when I make decisions during the day about like, you know, whether to go to gym or not, whether to start work first thing in the morning or not, whether to, you know, hang out with a certain friend or not, you know, all of those decisions build my future self. And the new self is always going to feel uncomfortable and difficult because we, you know, it's like our nature and survival instinct to cling to what we know. So it's always going to be a hard decision and it's always going to be difficult to do like the things that you need to do. And that's never going to change. And so the point is there's two. One is in what I call the Frankl pause, which is the moment of decision. Like Viktor Frankl said, like in each moment we can decide, you know, what we want to do. And we have that conscious pause and we really decide, you know, if I'm going to eat this, then I'm going to feel like this, you know, and this is the consequence of it. If I'm going to eat the salad instead, then that there's a different consequence. And having that ability to have that Frankl pause is so powerful. And that's what iboga really gives you. It gives you that headspace. Like I said, like you shake out the trash from your mind. Right. And you can have the space to make those conscious decisions. Whereas before you were running, like I was running on autopilot, you know, like waking up a certain time, eating a certain way, doing certain things, making decisions, da, da, da. And so having that spaciousness in my head is just like, so it's like, wow, this is so great.
I read a book on that actually. And I read the whole book and I tried to practice, but it's just, it's something that I personally, I need help with, you know, it's not just something I can read and be like, oh, I'll just do that because our brains are wired.
Do you know what book that was?
I can't remember offhand. I'll have to dig around in my notes because I have a list of every book I've ever read, but I'll dig through that. But when I do, I'll put it in the show notes. Just talk about giving yourself 10 seconds or so before making a decision. But for me, it was hard. My brain's wired to move relatively quickly. So I'm also looking forward to trying iboga to see if it will do that for me as well. Did you find that a pretty unanimous outcome with most people? It gives you the spaciousness. That's a wonderful thing to leave with. Yeah.
Focus as well, like focus on the important things because lots of people focus on the not important things. And I spoke to someone, Kim, who she was in my ceremony in April as well. And she was just like, how I was at work. There was just like so much room in my brain for things. And so I've heard it from quite a lot of people. So you really have that space to craft yourself and your reality and like everything about you into like becoming the new you. Because if you keep making, like I kept making for years now, the same decisions. And I was like, nothing's changing. Like, of course, nothing's changing, you know? So, and then just the value of doing hard things and making, you know, making those hard decisions over and over again, they get easier. Like your 100th cold shower is going to be easier than your first. Yeah. So even before the ceremony, I have a coach and he got me to do like cold showers first thing in the morning. I really didn't want to do it. So I was like, no, I don't like cold water, blah, blah, blah. I had every excuse under the sun. And now, even though I don't love it, and because I see the benefits,
I just finished my shower off with 30 seconds. Yeah. I used to. I've taken a bit of a break now, but I did in the summer. I find every time the weather starts to get colder, I shy away from it. But it's making that decision and being conscious about choosing the hard thing to do and just sticking with it, doing it anyways.
Yeah, it can be like, you know, it can be doing an extra rep or extra set at the gym, you know, yeah, or running an extra mile or extra kilometer, or like what it can be many different. It could be saying yes to a psychedelic experience. It can be so many different things. But like that, I really undervalued, like people would call me, like for many years, I chose the unconventional path with travel and business and lots of things. And people would call me brave. And I didn't understand that, like, I just made decisions that were hard for other people, you know? Yeah. And so it's like,
probably been hard for yourself as well, to a degree. I know, yeah, when I've traveled by myself, especially the first time, it wasn't like, oh, joy. It's like, oh, shit, what's going to happen? And there's fear underneath that excitement, you know? And there's, yeah, uncertainty, and all of those questions come up. And, but you just still, you power through because the benefits outweigh the risks to me. Cost benefit, yeah, analysis. Is it going to cost you something or is it going to benefit you in the long run? And benefit is always growth. It's expansion. It's learning new things and having experiences, which to me outweigh the risk, which is, I don't know, staying home. I have no idea what the, yeah, risks there. That to me, those are the risks, is being boring and staying home and not making the hard choice. Like that to me feels more risky because it just doesn't feel in alignment with who I am. But making those little decisions to do that throughout your life, well, it does get easier. You're right.
Yeah. And to kind of wrap it up in a pretty bow, this topic of hard things, like I found that the consequence of me not doing hard things was actually like depression, like mental stagnation.
Yeah.
And I didn't really understand it until the Saboga ceremony. I had gotten out of like, you know, lots of lulls and stints, and I wrote a book about mental health last year, Mystery and Magic of Depression, 7 Steps to the Other Side.
Right. Amazing. I'll link that in the show notes as well.
Talk about psilocybin and microdosing psilocybin to help. Amazing. So cool. I had a few experiences of that. And yeah, it wasn't until the Saboga ceremony where we really got it. I'm like, if I just did the hard thing, I didn't want to get up, but get up, you know, make the hard decision. I didn't want to shower, but shower. You know, I didn't want to move physically. You know, if you keep on doing the thing that you don't want to do, you get better. And that was like, I just couldn't believe that, even though that message was out there, because everything is already out there, I couldn't believe that it never like landed for me.
Right. Until this,
so that was wild.
Well, I'm so glad that it did. And I remember talking to you because I had just gotten home from California. And I was in one state, which was probably during too much tequila hanging out with my friends. And you were at this heightened state. And I just feel like I came home from the festival. But I could feel your expansion. So thank you for that. That was wonderful.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, no, I, like I said, I'm loving this conversation because I hope to get the word out of Iboga like more. Mm. Lots of people get it confused with ibogaine. Ibogaine is the alkaloid in Iboga, which they extract. And they use ibogaine often to help heroin and alcohol addicts.
Right, sounded familiar. Yes. Okay, gotcha.
And ibogaine, because it's such a much stronger dose and it's made in a lab, I've never tried ibogaine, but it's apparently quite difficult. And I think people get that mixed up in terms of Iboga and ibogaine.
Yeah, so that is very interesting to know, and good to know that there's a difference there for anyone who's confused. But great takeaways. And I'm now even 10 times more excited to go on my little journey and adventure. And hopefully this will allow other people to start doing their own research and check back too, because we'll probably do another episode after I have my experience in a few months or so for more updates. I'm really looking forward to it. And nervous, as always, as I am before any plant medicine ceremony. I'm slightly apprehensive and curious, I guess, more than nervous, but still excited. And so moving forward, I know I wanted to talk about what we've been cooking up and what you've been cooking up for a while, since before my time, the Mastery of Human Connection with the Relating Academy, which Anna is the founder of.
So did you want to give everyone a briefing on what the Relating Academy is and also the Mastery of Human Connection?
Yeah, so it is relatingacademy.com. It is live. I am posting a blog weekly, multiple times a week there on as well. And yeah, it was actually born from my first Avoga ceremony at the beginning of the year. I was already on the path. So I've been working with entrepreneurs for about 8 years, helping them like with mindset coaching and business coaching and all sorts of things. And I came to a point where I wanted to rejig things and find something. Like, I really love mindset coaching and I'm like exceptionally good at it. And people always have like amazing results with their businesses. I just wanted something deeper than business. And I love business. Like, way before coaching, I had different businesses of my own. I had an export business. We were exporting wine, of all things, from South Africa to Ghana and also Zimbabwe. So, an export business, I had a security company. We had thousands of guards work for me. And so that was like where I came from. I was a closeted hippie going to every personal development thing and like really into healing. But I never like that was never what I led with. I always led with the business stuff. And then when I really like when I sold the one business and I had to like look at like, you know, what was it that made me successful in all these different businesses? And I was like, well, it was the closeted stuff. So then I started to be more open with that and combine those two. And then in terms of human behavior, like it all boils down to relationships, whether it's business or personal. And like, and I was like, the number one thing that would make this world better is better relating. If we all learn to relate better with each other.
With one another and with other elements in our life too. Like relating comes in all facets, right?
Exactly. Relating with your purpose. You know, understanding that like your relationship with your purpose is one of the most important relationships you'll ever have.
Absolutely.
You know, you will not always be in love with your purpose.
Yeah, it'll evolve and change with along with you and learning to relate to your own change and growth as well. There's just many variations of relating. So that's exciting. In the course, the first one has more of a specific tone. Do you want to get into that?
Yeah. The first one we're doing with men entrepreneurs, and I've primarily most of my clients traditionally and just organically have been men entrepreneurs. And it was interesting how, you know, what I do is related to creating a safer world with better men leaders. And that comes from the way that my dad was really busy when I was young and was like absent emotionally and was just like obviously surviving and earning money in an immigrant family situation. And so me helping men be better leaders and fathers and partners is very close to my heart.
Right.
Because I'm very, very passionate. I do feel like, you know, creating that will create safer societies for everyone, for their daughters and their sons and their partners and their peers and everyone else and people they work with. So yeah, I'm really, really passionate about that. Mastery of Human Connection is the central theme of it and helping them with their relationships. I love also helping people with their business partnerships because business partnerships are so intimate and so close, you know, that there's so many different levels of intimacy and also like, you know, there's mental intimacy and there is financial intimacy. And yeah, the more I'm digging into it and more I'm helping people in this field, the more it's just like, this is it for me, you know, in terms of the central piece, because from a very young age, I've been looking for the building block. Like I wanted to know what's at the core of things. So that's what led me into like learning about quantum physics and, you know, energy. And so I find in business and even, you know, helping someone in business, it's helping them with their relationships also and this with their personal relationship as well. So yeah, I'm really, really excited about this. And so every day I'm just so happy because I, for a long time, I was like searching for my thing, I think.
What resonated.
And like, I just like landed on this and yeah, it's super fulfilling.
Amazing. I'm so happy for you. And I'm so happy to be a small part of it. And it's funny too, because when we first started working together, a lot of the outline of the course were things that I had just either been researching and diving into myself, going through my own personal journey, more in the intimate side. But a lot of the bases are very similar and they cross over. So it may be relating to your business or making sure your home life is okay while you maintain a business. But for me, I just had a lot of similar attributes to what I was going through personally. And so it really hit home for me as well. When I first looked over the course material, I was like, hot damn, I've just been reading all about this and this is so amazing. And It felt very much so in alignment and feels like it's really necessary right now, especially because we're going through a ton of changes. Women in the workforce, so the family homes look different and splitting up housework. And there's just so many variables that are evolving in the last 50 years, night and day. And so learning to relate to those and to relate to our work life with our home life is really important right now. So I'm very grateful that this came to you in a download and you've been working really hard on it. I'm really excited to launch. And there's no launch date as of yet, but we'll definitely link to the website at least. And we have a register
you
on the website.
You can send inquiries, yeah, via the website and via my Instagram as well.
And your Instagram is at Anna Shalina, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll also link to that too below. You have TikTok as well. Where else can people find you?
Yeah, mainly those. You Google Anna Shalina, like I come up. So that's pretty,
you do
pretty
up.
Easy
I,
to
I
find
I did my
me.
Refund when doing the website. So yes, just Google Anna Shalina. Lots comes up. And YouTube as well, because I know I set that up.
Yes.
And that's going to be rolling soon too. So yes, jump on YouTube. There'll be some content on there coming up soon. So that's really exciting as well. And yay, I'm so grateful. Did you have anything else that you wanted to wrap up with or leave the audience with? Any nugs of wisdom or anything? I mean, you've already dropped so many wisdom bombs, so if you don't have any more, that's fine. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. If anyone knows, we don't pre-ask questions on the show. We just kind of roll with it. So
yeah, just in terms of, you know, linking what I was saying earlier about choosing the hard decisions in your relationship, you know, it can be really difficult because our relationships are like some of our, if the biggest trigger points for us, because they're so close and vulnerable and intimate, you know. And if you want a different relationship, you have to make the difficult different decisions and choices in every moment of like how you reconcile or how you handle an argument. So it's really creating that pause and that space for yourself and understanding that every relationship is a reflection of what's going on inside and taking ownership of that, creating better relationships from the inside out. I'm definitely not the first person to talk about this. There's plenty of books out there as well, but it is the most powerful way. I was coaching someone this morning about quantum entanglement, where one of the parties had strayed a little bit, not completely, but there was some energy that was taken away, you know, from a certain direction. And I'm like, well, you know, it can't happen on one side. It's always going to be quantumly entangled, especially right. If you're sleeping with them.
Right.
And so really understanding that is very powerful. That takes away a lot of blame, that starts to rebuild trust and respect.
Powerful. So you can work on yourself as well. Amazing. Well, great note to end off on then. Well, thank you so much for being here. It was such a delight to have you on the show. You have so much wisdom, so much to share, and so much to offer. So very grateful for you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on here. You are amazing. I love listening to your episodes. I always learn something. It is so enlightening as always. So I'm so grateful that you're doing this and that we're here together, that we've worked together for months on end now, and I'm excited for what's to come.
Heck yes, me too. And thanks everyone for joining us. Please don't forget to like, comment, subscribe if you found some value. And if you're on Spotify or Apple, please leave a review. That really helps out the show. And thanks you guys. And thanks again, Anna. And we'll be in touch. Bye.